This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have a gentleman named Todd Park, who is a U.S. Chief Technology Officer. Good morning, Todd. How are you?
Terrific. How are you?
You are the few people I don't have to introduce. Most people have heard of you somewhere, some manner. And so just for the benefit of some of our listeners, maybe someone's living under a rock somewhere, have never heard of Todd Park. Perhaps you could tell our audience a little about your background and how you wound up in this crazy position.
Sure. Well, I'm currently U.S. Chief Technology Officer and Assistant to the President. Basically, I'm a tech entrepreneur in residence at the White House. My job is to work with the most talented innovators inside and outside government to come up with and execute at high speed a portfolio of projects that unleash the power of data, tech, and innovation to improve the well-being of the American people. So my background actually is that I spent most of my life as a private sector tech entrepreneur. Then what happened, is I got an email from HHS. The actual detailed story is that I had co-founded and over the course of 10 years helped to build a company called Athena Health, which built the first web-based software for doctor's offices and web-based business services. We took it public in 2007 in order to stay married. A year after it went public, I retired, moved to California where my in-laws lived. We had a baby. My wife was happy with me for the first time basically ever.
Maybe the only time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, it was a brief, short-lived period of happiness.
Take a picture of that one. Remember this?
Exactly.
For 6 months. I know people who married
were happy.
I know people married since 1990. They said 6 years of happy marriage.
In my retirement, I helped to co-found two more companies. I didn't
in
run
my
them.
Retirement, like, yeah. He's some old 70-year-old guy.
Hard to stay retired.
Yeah.
I co-founded two more companies. I didn't run them. I just funded them and helped to get them going. One called Castlight Health, which provides shopping services for healthcare. You can see the cost and quality service before you go. And then I worked with an organization called Ashoka, based here in D.C., that incubates and supports social entrepreneurs around the world, and helped Ashoka start a company in India called HealthPoint Services that delivers affordable telehealth, clean water, drugs, and diagnostics to rural villages. And then what happened is I got in the summer of 2009 a email from Deputy Secretary Bill Corr of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And he said, you know, we'd love to talk with you about becoming CTO of HHS. Bill Corr asked to meet with you. You always take the meeting.
Yeah.
And so I came to D.C. to meet with Bill. But my question really was, you know, why do you want to talk with me, right? Because I don't know anything about government. I've never served in government. And Bill said, that's exactly why we want to talk with you, because this job isn't what you think it is. It's not the person who runs all the IT at HHS. We've got a whole system of CIOs that do that. It's a new position we're creating to be tech entrepreneur in residence at HHS, to be an internal change agent who spends all of his or her time working with our most talented innovators to come up with and execute projects to leverage data and tech, unleash data and tech in innovative ways to improve the health of American people.
And there's certainly a lot of innovation going on now. You just pick up the newspaper, Blue Button, MyGov, OpenData, RFPZ, 20% campaign. We got safetydata.gov, hdiforum.org, and we catch my breath. And we have something called the Datapalooza.
That's
what I'm going to talk about today, you know?
Yeah.
You go out to your wife to a restaurant, and you order Datapalooza, right? No, it's not what you order. It's a
restaurant. It's a tasty dish,
so what
man.
What in the world is Datapalooza?
It's a tasty dish. Yeah. So basically, what happened is in this interview with Bill Corr, I said, well, you know, what kinds of things would we work on together? He said, well, we've got all this data sitting in our vaults, you know, and it's used pretty narrowly right now. So what can we do to really multiply the social return for the American public on that data? We started brainstorming about it and started coming up with ideas. Actually, it was the allure of that particular kind of work that caused me to go back to my wife and say, look, you know, we should really consider moving to D.C. and me joining the government. She was furious, absolutely furious. But after 4 days, she said, look, you know, if they're actually creating a position like that, a change agent position, and if you get to work on stuff like that, like unleashing the power of data, then it's your national duty to do that job. So I'll move back to the East Coast with you. I'll bring the baby. I'll lose you to workaholicdom again because you've really got to do this. In August of 2009, I arrived as CTO at HHS and immediately got to work on this data opportunity.
Yeah.
And what we actually cooked up, a team of us at HHS, is this whole idea of the Health Data Initiative, collaborating very closely with a team at the Institute of Medicine. And the whole idea behind the Health Data Initiative is to actually replicate what happened in previous eras when the government liberated weather data, liberated access to the Global Positioning System, GPS.
National Weather Service.
Exactly. So actually, for decades now, the National Weather Service has not only collected the vast majority of weather data in America, but it's done something even more interesting, if that's possible, which is it's actually taken that data and made it publicly available electronically in machine-readable form, which means you can import into other applications and services and use it, available to anybody for free without intellectual property constraint. Right, and that has directly catalyzed an enormous array of innovations by the private sector, everything from Weather Channel to weather.com, mobile weather apps, even weather insurance, and much, much more. The government in the 80s began to liberate access to the Global Positioning System, right? Which, of course, now has fed massive private sector innovation, ranging from Foursquare on your iPhone to navigation systems.
So where's the pizza shop?
Exactly, to precision crop farming, right? Yeah. Which has made agriculture much more productive. In fact, it's estimated that currently GPS alone has added about $90 billion annually to the American economy in value, and it's still growing, right?
So why not apply this to the rule of health?
Exactly. And so HHS and other agencies like EPA, USDA, et cetera, are just sitting on an enormous amount of incredibly valuable health-related knowledge and information. Everything from the latest and greatest medical knowledge at NIH, right, to detailed information about insurance products or drugs, the quality of our hospitals and nursing homes, the health statistics about our communities, and much, 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 much more, right? So what the Health Day Initiative actually sought to do was really three things. First of all, to make brand new data available that had never been made available before, while protecting privacy rigorously.
And this is a community health data initiative, is that right?
It started out as that. Actually, okay. Actually, the origin story is actually pretty interesting, right? Mm-hmm. So we actually started by calling it the Community Health Data Initiative because we started with essentially a subset of the data that we thought we could make available or more accessible rapidly, right? And that was more detailed information about the health of our communities, like smoking rates, obesity rates, the performance of the healthcare system in terms of quality, prevention, utilization of services, et cetera, right? And also actually making more easily accessible information about hospital quality, nursing home quality, et cetera. A couple points there, actually. We thought it was important to do two things. One was not only to make brand new data available, but also take existing data that was available publicly, but wasn't necessarily usable by developers, right? Because it was in books, PDFs, or static websites, and turn it into stuff that was actually machine readable, downloadable, accessible via application programming interfaces, right? Where you can just, essentially the bottom line being developers can import it and use it in their work. So we actually put a pile of this data together, you know, community health and provider quality data that it was either made newly accessible or more usable by developers, right? And then following advice from Tim O'Reilly, kind of an Obi-Wan Kenobi of Silicon Valley, right? So he said, look, if you want this data to get used, right, for good, you should probably engage with the users from the beginning, right? So we, with the Institute of Medicine, convened a meeting.
Marketing 101 is what does the customer want?
Exactly, right? And so in ecosystem development 101 is engage the ecosystem from the beginning, right? So ask them, is this data useful to you? What would you do with the data? What do we need to improve the data, yeah? So what we did was, with the Institute of Medicine, at the Institute of Medicine, we convened a meeting of about 40 amazing people. They're a mix of tech people and healthcare people, rock stars from both worlds. We mashed them up in a room. We put the pile of data in the middle of the room and said, look, you know, if this data were made available or much easier to use, what would you do with it? And over the course of about 8 hours, they brainstormed about 20 different classes of applications and services you could build with this data. Then at the end of the meeting, we challenged everyone in the room to actually either build or get their friends or friends' friends to build these ideas. And if they actually could, we would make them famous in a...
that'll motivate people.
Yeah. What we call a Community Health Data Initiative Forum, but actually what became known as the Health Data Palooza.
Right.
That'd be held in 90 days, hosted by the Institute of Medicine and by Secretary Sebelius. And sure enough, 90 days later, people came back with over 20 either brand new or upgraded services and applications, utilize our data to help people find the right healthcare provider for them, to help.
In 2010.
This is in 2010. This is actually June of 2010 was the first Health Data Palooza. But tools to help you find the right healthcare provider, help you understand the health of your community, compare it to others, see what other communities are doing to actually improve health, that gamified health education, all kinds of incredibly interesting stuff. And one of the key punchlines was that these amazing new applications and services, or upgrade apps and services that use our data to actually help improve health and healthcare and help the American public, the total taxpayer expenditure to build these services was zero. Nada.
That's a famous picture you're on the internet, by the way, going zero.
Going zero, okay. So all we did was jujitsu into the public domain and make more available and usable, right, data taxpayers already paid for, right? And then American entrepreneurs and innovators did the rest. And there were two things that happened at Data Palooza that were actually really important.
We'll get back to that in a couple minutes. We've got to take a quick break here, Todd. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We come back, we're going to talk about Data Palooza. I want to leave you with this one great quote. It's a tweet I read yesterday. It was, we think a Data Palooza is really the best kind of palooza. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Todd Park. He is the CTO of a little office in downtown Washington, D.C. somewhere. Most people know about him. We're talking about an event that's going to take place first week in June called Data Palooza. Tell us more about Data Palooza. I mean, what goes on at a Data Palooza? Two-day event? What happens there anyway?
Yeah. So basically what happens is it's a this is actually the third annual Health Data Palooza, and it's being convened by a public-private alliance called the Health Data Consortium, led by Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, Institute of Medicine, California Healthcare Foundation, and others, including HHS.
HDIforum.org for more information, right?
HDIforum.org for more information. It's June 5th and 6th at the Washington Convention Center. And what is happening is that the public-private partnership has put out, over the last few months, an open call for American innovators to apply to present at a Health Data Palooza. Right? Anyone who's actually built a really cool, really powerful, really helpful new product or service or upgraded product or service that uses open health-related data from the government or other sources, right, to help consumers, help doctors, nurses, community leaders improve healthcare, they're invited to throw their hat in the ring to present in a TED-style talk at this.
Or it's more like American Idol-style presentation where people, doctors and clinicians view and they vote on what the best one
right,
is.
That's right. So what happened is basically we had 230 companies and nonprofits throw their hat in the ring.
From 20 to 50 to 230.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So over 20 folks were presenters at the 2010 Health Data Palooza. There were 50 selected to present at the 2011 Health Data Palooza. And then this year, there are 230 who applied.
Blown up.
We actually, even the Washington Convention Center over 2 days can't hold that many talks.
Wow.
But it's been narrowed down to about 100 by independent panels of patient judges,
voters across
judges.
The nation.
exactly. So, you know, in an American Idol style process. And so the people who survived that process, who actually were picked, are going to present, exhibit, and talk about their amazing work as entrepreneurs, innovators using open health related data at the Health Data Palooza. There also will be exciting keynotes from folks like Secretary Sebelius, Senator Bill Frist, Atul Gawande, John Bon Jovi, and other folks. So very exciting. Lots of workshops about how to use data, get more familiar with open government data, and get inspired to actually build the next great set of amazing innovations using data to help the American people.
So if you're listening to this interview in September of this year, you can go to hdiforum.org and you can probably catch up with some presentation events and find out what happened, because a lot of my listeners kind of listen on a topical basis and want to find out about healthcare data.
Yeah, that's right.
So baseball season here, we got the Boston Red Sox. They have a farm system. We know that. Well, I think the farm team for the Data Palooza maybe is ideation workshops and codathons, and then ideas get developed and all of a sudden you move up to the big leagues.
Yeah.
And this is a tryout for the big leagues. Okay, we're going to see if you can hit a curveball, and if you can hit a Strasburg curveball, we're going to let you in. And that's what this is. It's really the big leagues now. And okay, now you can present to peers and find out if your idea has any value at all.
That's right. That's right. There are going to be about 1,200 people live at Health Data Palooza. It also will be broadcast online. You can go to hdiforum.org the morning of the event, the 2 days, to actually watch the proceedings online. And just to, in keeping with your analogy, One of the things that we're actually seeing that's just amazing is the spontaneous development of local data palooza's across the country. So a great example of this was I gave a talk in Louisiana several months ago about the whole idea of Health Data Initiative and liberating data and unlocking the power of American entrepreneurs to build amazing, magical stuff with the data that, that helps people. And there's this guy named Ramesh Kolaru, who works at the University of Louisiana Lafayette, who got really excited and stood up and said, I'm going to do a health data codathon in Lafayette, Louisiana.
And he actually did it.
And I said, that's fantastic, you know. And then the next thing I know, 4.5 months later, I get invited to go down to Lafayette. And State of Louisiana and University of Louisiana Lafayette had put together a health data codathon.
It's a farm team for HHS. That's what it is.
300 people came from like wow. 18 states, from places as far away as Germany,
Louisiana,
to Lafayette, Louisiana, which is an amazing place, by the way. It's an incredible, hidden bayou of Silicon Valley esque mojo. It's really, you should call it the Silicon Bayou, right? And so 300 folks came to Silicon Bayou who were experts in health and experts in hacking and development, and they formed up, you know, pickup teams and then competed to build the best data powered solutions that can help contribute to the fight against child obesity.
So Cajun Coders, I just got it.
Cajun Coders, they call it the Cajun Code Fest. First thing, Cajun Code Fest is going to be a recurring thing.
The Cajun Code Fest,
so,
right.
So first of all, the winner of the Cajun Code Fest actually got a buy past the American Idol process to go directly to the Nationals.
And do not collect $200, go straight to go. Yeah.
The National Data Palooza. Secondly, actually, Ramesh just recently told me that 6 startups got formed
wow.
at the event, which is going to actually, again, contribute to the fight to improve health and health.
Did you say creating jobs?
Creating jobs, absolutely.
I mean, that's what it's all about.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, and there are a lot of stories along those lines. So actually, one of the companies that got surfaced in the 2010-2011 Data Paloozas is a company called iTriage. It's a company that got started by an ER doc named Pete Hudson in Denver, Colorado, who had just seen one too many cases of patients not getting access to the right care at the right time. So as opposed to just stewing about that, he decided to start a company. So he and a friend co-founded a company called iTriage, and it built, leveraging government and other data, this amazing mobile and web app that allows you to, you know, enter your symptoms, and then it'll find the closest best provider for you, and then even allow you to book an appointment with that provider.
No.
So in like 18 seconds, it's been downloaded, I think, over 6 million times. It has 3 to 4 million mobile sessions a month. And he's hired 72 people in Denver. He's got 33 open positions. So if any of your listeners have, you know, a niece or nephew or son or daughter or friend in Denver,
who wouldn't want to live in Colorado? You know, DataPalooza has something called an action beat. I don't know what is an action beat.
Yeah, an action beat. So actually, what happens at the DataPalooza is not just these 100 entrepreneurs, you know, companies, nonprofits presenting their data powered products and services, but also it's an opportunity for organizations to make announcements as to plans going forward, opportunities going forward, like hackathons are going to hold, or challenges are going to issue, or major new initiatives that they're launching. And because, again, it's a great place to get the word out to the exact target audience you want to get it out to around opportunities.
Humans face to face, not tweeting, but humans face to face interaction. This
it's interesting because we, you know, talked to NOAA and the National Weather Service, a couple years ago, when we were getting this started, to get their advice about how to actually create a thriving.
And they said human beings, huh?
and actually they said, look, yeah, we've got the, you know, online user group, right? But they said there's really no substitute for an annual meeting.
Look at the guy standing up in the meeting. You know, he got emotionally charged from your talk.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, in a Twitter, Facebook world, you know, human-to-human contact, human-to-human interaction, you know, the inspiration that you have, right, talking to someone in the hallway, 4 hours in the event. I mean, that's really the
Michael
magic.
Dell in college. He got this idea to start selling computers from his dorm room. I mean, that these things happen like this.
Absolutely.
What is this IOM-NAE Health Data Collegiate Challenge Awards? You're challenging college kids here?
Yeah. Or? So this is the second time they've done. This is very exciting. So the Institute of Medicine and National Academy of Engineering are doing their second round of challenging students from across the country, and in particular students from the health professions and students from the engineering professions, to actually find each other on campus, team up, mash their expertise up, and compete to build the best data-powered apps.
Another farm team.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely.
Different, you know? Level. AAA, yeah. AA, but same thing.
Hey, absolutely. Absolutely. It's an ecosystem, right? Yeah. It's an ecosystem. One of the things I love about students, right, is that they haven't gotten the memo about what's impossible yet, right? And so they just come up with the darndest things, right? They're just amazing.
I didn't know you couldn't do that.
Exactly. Yeah. So you just love that injection of their mojo into the
So that's why they brought you in, because this guy is going to see the forest for the trees, or he's going to observe things that people can't. Things that
well, I think actually, you know, I think it's more that, you know, I just have a different base of experience, you know, I think that what they wanted to do is mash up my DNA with the DNA of the best innovators in government, you know. So what I'll tell you is incredibly powerful insight and realization that I've had that I'm trying to tell everyone I know, you know, in the world outside government, which is that so many of the very, 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 very best innovators and natural-born entrepreneurs I've ever met work for the U.S. federal government. They're just amazing.
Best kept secret.
Amazing. And so I actually learned the secret to how to affect change in government, which I'll share with you right now and your listeners. If you have an idea about what government should do, right, how government should change, the first and by far the most important thing you should do is go find the three people in government who had that idea a long time ago. I'm completely serious, okay? So that's the most critical thing to do, right? Go find them and say, look, I'm going to recruit you into a band. I'm going to put the band together, right? And I'll be your virtual CEO, which basically means I'll mow your lawn, bake cookies for you, provide air cover and block downfield for you to do what you've always wanted to do, right? And then you unleash them to do it. And then they are capable of doing extraordinary things, extraordinary speed. Healthy Initiative is a story of those ingenious innovators, folks like Greg Downing, folks like Aman Bhandari, just extraordinary folks.
HDIforum.org for more information. Got to take a quick break now. Going to come back, talk more about maybe the OMB digital strategy, maybe talk about the Presidential Innovation Fellows, and a whole lot more topics when we get back. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Todd Park, U.S. CTO. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Todd Park, famous U.S. Chief Technology Officer. He's everywhere. He's down there with the Cajun coders. He's up in New York City. He's in Washington, D.C. He's a traveling man. He decided to come in the studio for the benefit of our listeners so we could learn about something called Datapalooza, and maybe we can learn about something called the Presidential Innovation Fellow. What's this all about? Is this like the Fellowship of the Rings or something?
Yeah, a little bit like that. So this is a new program that we rolled out as part of our digital government strategy that Steve Van Roekel and I have rolled out this week. And it's a new program where we aim to bring in the most talented, most amazing innovators from outside government to work with the most talented, most amazing innovators inside government in small, agile teams on game-changing projects with the goal of delivering significant results within 6 months.
So for about 15 people.
That's right. Well, 15 people from the outside who'll be mashed up with amazing people on the inside. And actually, you know, beyond the actual fellows from outside, inside the government who'll be working on these projects, we're also actually opening up an opportunity for everyone to engage. All the amazing, all the talented people who want to help to be engaged. Even if they can't spend all of their time for 6 months working on it, we're going to give them opportunities to plug in, follow the projects, scrub in on particular questions, and offer their engagement and input and help.
So if they're sitting in Tulsa scratching their head saying, I'm smarter than that Todd Park guy, I can come in there and do something better than him, well, come on down.
God bless. Well,
please.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure there's plenty of brains everywhere in the United States. I mean, you
well,
can't...
Well, here's the thing. One of the other important principles, I think, to embrace as a change agent, you know, whoever is a change agent, right, is to recognize the truth of something called Joy's Law, which was named after Bill Joy, who co-founded Sun Microsystems. Back in the day, and he's a legendary figure in Silicon Valley. So Bill Joy once famously said, no matter who you are, you have to remember that most of the smartest people in the world work for somebody else, right? No matter who you are, you have a lot of smart people working for you, but most of the smart people, of course, don't work for you. They work for lots and lots of other people, right? So if you can figure out a way to tap into their ingenuity, you'll, of course, get more done a lot faster than otherwise, right? So one of the big changes that we see happening in government that's being catalyzed under the leadership of the president and is actually accelerating as we speak, is the whole notion of government embracing the power of innovation for the people, innovation by the people. The whole idea of open innovation, which more and more companies in the private sector are embracing. The whole idea that if you actually reach outside your walls, right, and you team up your smart people with all the other smart people.
And that's why you released it not in the Rose Garden, but up in New York.
Well, that's right. Well, and also actually here in D.C. and also on the web. You can go to whitehouse.gov/innovationfellows to actually learn more about what the inaugural five projects are and to throw your hat in the ring. Again, not just to apply to be a fellow, because not everyone can actually, you know, spend 6 months of their life full time working on this stuff, you know, but even if you just want to follow the products and help, right? Whether you be someone inside the government, outside the government, you know, join the network for these projects, you know, stay abreast of what's going on, offer your ideas, your contributions, your participation. We're looking for, both full-time fellows and folks who can actually just be part of the network associated with these projects.
So if you're playing along at home, that's whitehouse.gov/innovationfellows and hdiforum.org for more information and joining this conversation. Let's talk about this OMB digital strategy and some of the initiatives that came up just in the last couple of weeks here. There's so much news. I don't even know what to touch on first, you know?
Well,
releasing APIs, forcing people to release those APIs, let people find out what's going on. It's just, I can't keep track of all the things coming on.
Well, it's very exciting. And actually, one of the things that's important to note, and Steve also talks about this a lot, Steve Van Rokel, my partner, is that the digital government strategy was actually the output of a bunch of folks across government working for months to put their best ideas together and fuse it into the next iteration of what we should be doing as a federal government with respect to IT and data. It's the network of their ideas. It's actually enmeshed in that document and in, you know, critically, the implementation execution that is already actually underway. So the whole idea of the government going mobile, right? The whole idea of the government procuring in a smarter way, the whole idea of actually data going forward, having the default status of being open and being machine readable, right? That's a set of ideas that, again, you know, to bring it full circle, what we were talking about earlier, right? Those are ideas that a lot of people in government have had for a really long time. And so what this strategy does is provide the opportunity to actually gel those ideas, articulate them, and actually, you know, put the force of leadership of government behind them and to unleash forces across the government to get this stuff to happen. You know, I think it's actually going to be less this being imposed upon people and more this actually providing them with a permissioning signal for innovation across the government to actually press ahead more rapidly and more energetically on what they really want to do.
You know, you just pick up a newspaper, you find out that Apple sold $39 billion worth of product the first quarter, mostly mobile products. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to connect the dots here. You know, people who work are interested in using mobile devices to improve the way they work. I mean, the VA's got a test program going on. There's all kinds of test programs going on now.
That's right.
I think people are looking for direction and guidance on how to do this. I think this initiative is almost beyond mobile. I mean, it assumes mobile's there. But wait a minute, what about the domain names? Let's cool it with the domain names. Let's pare those back a little bit. What about APIs? You talked about those earlier. How can we unleash the data unless there's an API out there?
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah. So it's all about actually going citizen-centric, about bringing government to the fingertips of folks wherever they happen to be, and about unleashing the power of our data so that lots and lots and lots of other smart people on top of our smart people can actually build services that leverage the data to help people, find the right healthcare provider for their family, to help people pick the right college, to help actually folks, first responders, plot the safest route through a city, to actually help you save your energy bill through smarter, better informed shopping. The idea of liberating our data so that lots and lots of other folks on top of us can actually build services, that movement will result in a lot more value, a lot more benefit being created for the American people at much, much, much lower cost.
I think here's a good example of taking a basic idea and expanding on it. I heard Dr. Neil Levin speak a couple weeks back, a doctor over at VA. He talked about this Blue Button project and just kind of casually mentioned it. And he's going to throw a little comment. And then I see one of these initiatives here is let's take this Blue Button, take some lessons from that, and let's run with it. Let's take this little basic concept of maybe you should be able to switch doctors and not have it take 2 weeks to find something in your past. So take this record, and that's what you're trying to do, isn't it?
That's right, absolutely. And so this is a great example of a initiative that got started by an incredible team inside government and is now actually being cloned across the private sector.
Trying to serve veterans.
That's right. So a fantastic team at the VA working with folks at DOD and Medicare, right, had this idea, right, which is, well, why don't we let veterans, members of the military, Medicare seniors go to the secure website, authenticate themselves, and hit a blue button and download a copy electronically of their own data, right? Didn't make a huge to-do about it, just did it, right? Launched it without a huge amount of fanfare. It's a huge hit. So close to a million people now have actually already downloaded multiple times a copy of their own data. And even
they didn't predict a million.
No,
they just thought it was a good idea.
Actually,
but whoa,
Secretary Shinseki was told that if it were a breakout hit, that maybe 25,000 veterans might ultimately download
account. 25,000.
But it turns out people really want their own data, right? So without a lot of marketing, right, you got close to a million folks, veterans, members of the military, Medicare seniors have downloaded their own data. And maybe even more interestingly, right, after we launched the initiative, we got calls from the private sector that basically asked us if we were allowed to do what we had just done, right? And we said, we don't really understand your question. Can you kind of clarify your question? They said, are you allowed under HIPAA, the health privacy law, to let patients download a copy of their own health information? We said, yes, you are.
What about address changes? I mean, you've done so much easier from the citizen perspective than some other person changing address.
Oh, it just makes life so much easier. I mean, if you've ever been in the healthcare system as a patient or cared for a loved one who was a patient, right, you'll know that getting your own information, right, is just really hard. You'll also know that actually the ability to get that information at the right time and put it in the right hands, maybe the difference between sickness and health or even life and death. My wife and I were fortunate to have a second child about a year ago, a beautiful baby daughter named Diana. About a month after Diana was born, I got a call from my wife who was hysterical, and she said, "Meet us at the ER at Children's National."
So never a good call.
ER, never a good call to get. Diana at the hospital was diagnosed with what's called a ventricular septal defect. It's a big hole in your heart. She had a particularly big one. It was 5 to 7 millimeters in size, they thought at the time, which is huge if you think about the size of a baby's heart. Fortunately, if you're going to have a serious congenital heart defect, she had the one that you want to have because you can do open heart surgery to fix it. If it goes well, she should be okay. Fortunately, she did have successful open heart surgery a few months ago. But I'll tell you what, during that whole experience, this whole notion of being able to get your own health information at the right time and being able to put it in the right hands of the right nurses and docs, it became very non-abstract to me. It is really the difference between sickness and health, between life and death. And Blue Button for America aims to clone that capability, not just for veterans, but for every American, get a wave going that ultimately actually carries to all the corners of the country in terms of giving patients their own data, letting patients get a copy of their own data.
Great example of specifically detailing how a project from the federal government can save taxpayers money, create jobs, and improve government ROI. We'll take a break, talk more about that when we get back. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's guest is Todd Park, U.S. CTO. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Todd Park, United States Chief Technology Officer. Todd, I got to tell you about a rumor I heard about you. I don't know if it's true or not. I was speaking to this gentleman named Anish, and he said, you are his brother from another mother. Is that true or is that false?
100% true. Printed from the same DNA. Brother from another mother. I love Anish.
Yeah. We were talking in the break about who you follow on tweets and the Twitter feed, and I follow you and I follow Anish and all kinds of interesting things. And there's one hashtag out there called Super Cool Dude. Who is the Super Cool Dude?
Well, I appended that to Farzad Mostashari, who's at Farzad _ONC. He's another brother from another mother, part of the family, and the national coordinator for health IT. Amazing physician / technology thinker, leader, doer, incredibly passionate about leveraging the power of data and IT to improve health. And so he is a super cool dude. I encourage folks to follow him on Twitter.
So if you want to follow Todd, it's Todd _Park and then Farzad _ONC. And then you can follow me at Ray Gilray. That's the easy one to remember.
Also a super cool dude.
Oh,
hashtag super cool dude.
Trying to be a super cool dude. So let's talk more about this digital strategy. So many different aspects of it. When you read about digital strategy, all of a sudden you stumble on a site called safety.data.gov. Now, what's that?
Yes. So one of the Presidential Innovation Fellows projects that's instantiating aspects of the digital government strategy is called the Open Data Initiatives Project. And the whole idea behind the Open Data Initiatives Project is to basically double down on Health Data Initiative and go faster and faster and faster, and also to actually clone the Health Data Initiative and health data pollute supply in additional sectors like education, energy, and safety. Actually last week, we, with Secretary LaHood, launched safety.data.gov, which DOT and federal partners have put together, an amazing new site. It puts in one place in a super accessible form over 700 data sets from the federal government that relate to everything from
transportation safety, to consumer product safety, to community safety, industrial safety, and more. And on top of actually just putting the data out there, again, taking a page from the Health Data Initiative playbook, we put together a ideation jam, an ideation workshop with 40 amazing thinkers and doers from the tech and safety spaces.
Another farm team, same pill.
They put together an amazing set of ideas. They committed to actually either build or get their friends to build these ideas. We're challenging the whole country to actually take the data on safety.data.gov and build their ideas. And in 90 days, we're going to host a safety data palooza to showcase the best of actually
what gets built. We'd love to promote it here and tell people
and inspire
about
more
it.
Innovation. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
When I get people in the studio here, a lot of people are listening, scratching their heads, going, I wonder if he's a real nerd. Well, maybe not. And so I've devised a 10-question test
Excellent.
That's scientifically proven to find out if you're a card-carrying nerd or not. I'm going to give you the questions right now.
All right, go
you ready?
It.
Here we go. Year you bought your first computer.
Oh, my gosh. It was a Commodore VIC-20. I have to remember the year. It was back in the day, whenever Commodore VIC-20s were awesome.
That's
cool.
Pretty respectable. Probably late 70s, maybe?
No, it was actually 80s? The 80s. I think the early 80s, okay. If I remember correctly. And what was the best part about it is that when you bought a computer game back in that day, you bought a book, and you actually typed into your VIC-20 the code in the book.
Oh,
you
really?
You recorded it on a tape recorder. Right?
I remember tape recorder storage. Yeah.
And you could play, you know, remember those games called Rotor, where you have the cursor and you actually go down the narrow, narrow canyon?
Yeah.
I think, you know what? Games have progressed in terms of graphics and other characteristics, but they've never gotten more fun than Rotor.
I can remember paper tape storage. That's how far I go back.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. No, actually,
me and Ben Franklin.
I think the era of when you code your own games was the golden era of computer gaming. Yeah.
Question two, your first cell phone.
Oh, my gosh. That was in the late 90s. And I'll always remember this. It was actually.
Well, you're losing points on that one, buddy.
Yeah, well, that's true. But here's actually the interesting thing that happened. We were in San Diego. It was part of the company I co-founded, Athena Health. We had, as part of that, actually been working with a medical practice in San Diego. And we all got these Motorola brick phones that literally the size of a brick.
Five pounds.
And I always remember this, actually. So we were sitting there, actually, at an outdoor cafe. And we were, you know, kids, right? I was, like, in a T-shirt. And, you know, my friends were in sweats, you know. And we were doing work, right? And talking on our cell phones. And these two business people came by dressed in suits and looked at us and said, well, they're just giving cell phones to anybody these days.
When I walk in a restaurant, they say, they'll let anyone in here.
So it was still the era where young people were not expected to have cell phones. But yeah, they were the size of bricks. That was pretty.
So we know we have a Twitter feed. And I just want to pump this out real quick. HDIforum.org for more information on Datapalooza.
Yeah.
Getting right back here. Do you have a blog? You have a blog you recommend?
Oh, where I blog, where I read the blogs of others. I blog on the White House OSTP site. I blog.
Not
on...
a bad place to blog of all places. I happen to blog at the White House John.
I just write stuff and I give it to people and they put it up in different places. But I understand they put it up on the WhiteHouse.gov site or House OSTP site. There's actually a blog post I just put up on the Presidential Innovation Fellows Program that explains how it's going to work and what the products are that people can actually check out.
Good. Do you use any online personal backup?
I mean, there's obviously, you know, backup associated with
But personally, just
work. Actually. I've got all my personal stuff being backed up in the cloud. Suffice to say that in prior eras, I had experience with.
This is a discreet statement there.
With life without proper backup. So I highly recommend proper backup.
I tell my kids that if you don't back up, you'll crack up. If you don't back up, you'll crack up. What flavor smartphone do you have?
I've got an iPhone.
Okay. And number of apps on that iPhone?
Oh, heck. Actually, you know what? I'm not one of those guys who downloads randomly.
Okay.
So I've got probably about, I would say, 70 or 80.
Not bad. What kind of tablet device do you have?
Tablet?
Mm-hmm.
Well, iPad, of course, right?
Well, I don't know about a course. Social networking. We're going to find out if you're a nerd, though.
Oh, yeah.
Social networking sites you participate in?
So Twitter is my official social networking presence.
Yeah. I sent you an article from Quora just this morning.
Yeah.
It was on engineers.
It was excellent.
I thought it was very insightful.
Excellent. It was actually very, very good.
This guy named Lau, and he said, no, this is what you want out of it.
He's spot on.
And he said, you don't need a computer science major. You can probably get by with an English major. Someone can think in this way.
That's 100%
and it's collaborative.
That's 100% right.
It's
so bright. That's 100% right.
And last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
Oh, electronic.
Electronic.
Of course.
Well, you're scoring some points. I'll have to run this through my UNIVAC computer in my basement.
Steve Jobs bio. That gets me more points. Actually, it was the last book I read. So.
Yeah, that's great. Let's get Mac down to some initiatives here. Datapalooza is coming up. We want to promote this and let people know you can find out all kinds of information. There's going to be different types of apps going to be demoed there for community, for consumers, and for caregivers. I mean, for caregivers, talk about a forgotten group of people.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, a lot of the most exciting innovation and the most profoundly important innovations that will be shown at the Health Data Palooza are all about helping docs and nurses get equipped with the right tools to get the right data at the right time and actually make the right decisions to help them be the best they can possibly be. There's actually a very important transformation happening in healthcare in general, which is that both public and private payers are moving from what's called a fee-for-service system, where they pay docs and hospitals per doctor visit, per surgery, per hospital stay, to a new set of regimens you might call pay to keep people healthy, essentially where they have massive financial incentives to actually essentially take proactive care of people, coordinate care, reach out and engage patients, and do the stitch in time that actually avoids the hospitalization, avoids the ER visit. That's really impossible to do. That kind of proactive care is really impossible to do without data. So a bunch of the innovations people will see at the Health Data Palooza are these amazing companies and new services that take government and other data to essentially build IT cockpits for docs and nurses that actually help them get the situational awareness and help them understand what to do, when to do it, and then to coordinate with their fellow docs and nurses and integrate with the patient, like work closely with the patient to make sure the patient is as healthy as possible, doesn't get that complication, doesn't get to the ER, doesn't have to go to the hospital because they're as healthy as they can be.
And that's where the rubber meets the road, right there as a caregiver. When I saw the apps for caregivers, I said, well, finally someone's, considering someone, and this caregiver may be a mother of a sick child.
That's right.
And what can this mother from a sick child do to minimize suffering and delay for her patient, the most important patient in the world?
That's
right
absolutely
there.
Right. Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And so a lot of the very exciting tools that are being built and showcased are ones that really do engage not just patients, but their families, right? And the people that love them as extended and critical core members of the care team to help that person be as healthy as they can be.
We're going to have to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the digital strategy. I'd like to learn more about safety data, find out, what's going on with that. Maybe we can talk about Code for America and all kinds of different opportunities coming up.
Yeah.
You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's guest is Todd Park, U.S. CTO. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Todd Park, U.S. Chief Technology Officer. Boy, we've talked about everything in the world so far. We talked about super cool dude. We talked about a niche. Let's get serious here. Let's talk about some of these initiatives that you're trying to promote at the White House here. And one of them is called RFP Easy. What the heck is RFP Easy?
Yeah, this is another one of the new Presidential Innovation Fellows powered projects. RFP Easy is the brainchild of the Small Business Administration. And the idea is, over the course of 6 months, is to have a team develop a prototype of a process and a platform that the government can use to more easily procure solutions from small, high-growth companies, where a lot of the most innovative solutions are.
So if the objective is to engage private citizens in new ways, well, this is a tool to do it.
Well, that's right. That's right. And a couple things happen if you do this, right? One is that you give these innovative, high-growth small companies improved access to an emerging marketplace called the U.S. government, right, which can then help grow businesses and grow jobs. The other very important benefit is that you give government program owners much easier access to this set of solutions, which they find hard to access today.
Many of my listeners have spent time overseas. I sure have. And they read about this 20% campaign. Maybe it resonates with this audience better than other audiences. There's a lot of stuff going on in the international area as far as payments going. And that's what the 20% campaign is all about. USAID.
Yeah, this one actually, this is another Presidential Innovation Fellows project that we launched this week. And this one's actually getting a lot of resonance in a lot of places. It's really, really hitting home for a lot of people. So this is the brainchild of USAID. And their idea is to put together a team of citizen and government innovators that basically advances the ball significantly on helping USAID, helping government agencies, helping NGOs and companies actually overseas move from cash payments in support of government and commercial operations to mobile and electronic payment. So USAID, I mean, just to kind of make this clear, I mean, it pays its contractors electronically, of course, right? But the contractor, like for example, like the contractor in Afghanistan who's building roads, right, pays the thousands of Afghans who are actually working on those roads in cash.
And the issue with that is that when you pay in physical cash, there are unfortunately opportunities for waste, fraud, and abuse. Administrative costs are very high. There's, you know, safety issues.
You can't follow the money.
Safety issues. Yeah, there are transparency issues, obviously. So just to actually show the benefit of moving to mobile electronic payment, the Afghan National Police in one of the provinces of Afghanistan has been doing a pilot to move from cash to mobile payment.
You know, when LexisNexis studied that, they said that decrease in corruption primarily because of that.
Yes, exactly right. Because what happened is, actually, and two things happened. So one, there's a decrease in corruption. Second thing is that the police who were in the pilot started thanking the authorities for giving them an up to 30% raise. And the authorities said, we didn't give you a raise. We're paying you exactly what we paid you for, right? But before there had been middle people, right, who had been extracting money, yeah? So, and to really bring it home, right, when the police were being paid their post-middle people, right, salary, when they were being paid in cash, they were actually being offered more by the Taliban to switch sides. And when they were being paid their actual budgeted salary, because it was going directly to their mobile phone, they were being paid more than the Taliban were offering.
Good, right? Specific idea of how you can save taxpayers money. So I'm paying my taxes and it's going, I don't know where, a middleman somewhere in Afghanistan.
Right. Actually, so get bigger bang for your development buck. And actually, you know, in that province, more police, fewer Taliban, which actually means saving the lives of American soldiers. So going mobile doesn't just give you bigger bang for your taxpayer buck. It helps you save the lives of our men and women in uniform.
So what is this initiative called MyGov?
So MyGov is another Presidential Innovation Fellows project. And it basically seeks to, with a agile team, develop a rapid prototype of a single, streamlined, citizen-centric, intuitive system that Americans can use to interact with resources and information and services across federal government, really to essentially bring your government to you. And bring the information resources that you need to you, as opposed to making you kind of search across our thousands and thousands of websites to get the information.
So if you're listening to this 2 or 3 months from now, you can go to whitehouse.gov/innovationfellows and follow along with these five programs and see what's going on.
That's right. You can sign up to follow the products and actually offer your input and help.
MyGov, Open Data Initiatives, Blue Button, RFP Easy, and the 20% campaign. Those are the five big ones, right?
Those are the five big ones. Yes, indeed.
I'm going to ask you to look into my crystal ball here. And tell me, what's going on in the next 5, 10 years here in the world of healthcare? And what's going on with Tan Park? Are you going to stay with the federal government? Are you going to branch off and be one of these innovators? Or what's going to happen to you? What's going to happen to this whole idea of healthcare IT?
Well, so healthcare IT and the liberation of health data, I think, is a genie that's finally been let out of the bottle. It's very, very exciting. One of the best things that happened to me recently, actually, in this regard was I was looking at the 230 companies and nonprofits that have thrown their hat in the ring to compete to present at the 2012 June 5th, 6th Health Data Palooza. And I do a lot of meetups and code-a-thons and, you know, discussions with innovators across the country, right? I took a look at this set of 230 companies and nonprofits, the dossiers, and I hadn't heard of 90% of them. I said, who?
Good.
Are you? I've never met you, never spoken with me, right? And I looked at the founding dates of the companies. They were, you know, 2012, 2012, 2012. Wow. 2011, 2010, 2011. And, you know, it just shows that the ecosystem of using our data to build stuff to help people is out of control at this point. It is out of control. And all great innovation ecosystems are truly out of control. They're beautifully chaotic. They're decentralized, self-propelled. And that's really where health data innovation, health IT innovation is. And it's a wonderful thing for the American people that it is out of control.
Are you familiar with this project at HHS where they're actually funding some innovations? Isn't there an innovation center up there? I think they're funding.
So actually, there are a series of these, but one's actually at CMS, which is Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, mm-hmm. which is funding innovative projects to develop new ways to pay for care and by implication deliver care that improve outcomes and lower cost for the Medicare population. ONC actually has been funding innovation work in a variety of spaces to advance the ball on key health IT issues and to-dos. So there's a lot of innovative work going on.
You know, if you keep beating your head against the wall and try to do things the same all way, we've always done it this way, well, sometimes you're going to reach a dead end. There has to be a new way to do things. And I think one of the challenges for you is, well, you can't just schedule innovation. I mean, you have to come up with new ways, to come up with new ideas, and we've never done it that way before. I've never heard of these companies before. You know, I've been in situations in my life where I've tried to break through, and you know, Einstein says, you know, the sign of being an idiot is doing the same thing over and over again. Maybe there has to be a Todd Park that comes in and says, no, you idiots, this is not the way we should do it. We should have a bunch of young people get together and have a code-a-thon.
Actually, so here's what I really think. I think that actually so many of the things we need to do, we already know how to do. They're embedded in the brains of our incredibly talented innovators across the government. So again, remember the thing we were talking about earlier, right? You know, if you ever have an idea to change government, most important thing you can do, you know, is to go find the three people that had the idea a long time ago, right? And unleash their mojo to do it. I'm convinced, based on my last 2.5 years working in the federal government, very clear to me that, again, many of the most talented innovators in America work for the U.S. federal government. Incredibly smart, pragmatic, mission-driven, unstoppable forces. And what we have to do, the most important thing we can do as government leadership is not to come in and say, look, you know, we know better and we'll impose our brilliant ideas on you, because that's just bullpucky, right? It's actually unleash the mojo of our people, unleash the mojo of our most talented civil servants, let them do what they know how to do, let them know what they came here to do, let them kick butt for the American people, because that is how government truly can change, that's how government must change, and the return for the American people is massive.
A fellow, a talker up at TechCrunch, he said there's 40,000 mobile health applications out there. 40,000? I mean, this is this an incredible number that I didn't realize. And maybe Datapalooza will highlight or focus in on or showcase three or four of them that actually are practical and actually might work in this environment.
Yeah. So, you know, as with everything, you know, what you really want to focus on is not the kind of number of apps, but is actually the use of the apps to create benefit, right? So, unfortunately, most of the mobile apps that get built basically don't really get used by very many people. And if they get used, they don't get to get used again, right? And so what you really want to look for is, what is the concrete benefit being produced for people, you know, through apps, right? And the apps that actually do that are the ones that are getting rewarded with more use and are scaling, right? So iTriage, for example, as we mentioned before, a great example of a company that's built an amazing service off of open data. You know, it's got, I think, over 60% of its downloaders actually use the app on a recurring basis. I think the average in the Apple App Store is something like 5% after 6 months of downloaders actually use the app on an ongoing basis. So they've got, you know, over 6 million downloads, you know, 3 to 4 million regular kind of sessions, and, you know, and it's growing actually quite rapidly.
We're here talking about the Datapalooza coming up this week. And more information, you can go to hdiforum.org. If you want to work with Todd and be innovative and creative down at the White House, you can go to whitehouse.gov/innovationfellows. I'd like to thank you for coming in the studio today, Todd. This has been a great interview. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Todd Park, U.S. Chief Technology Officer. Thanks, Todd.
Thanks so much.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.